I'm David Schreiner-Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Matt Englert. Matt is the creator of freelancetransformation.com, where he helps fellow consultants and creative service providers to earn more and to build their consulting business around their lifestyle. Matt's expertise comes from running a web agency for 10 years, which he transformed from a traditional brick-and-mortar office and an 80-hour work week to significantly less work and far greater profitability. Matt's agency can be found at tiltedpixel.com. Matt, welcome to the show.
David, I'm really happy to be here.
It's great to have you on, and it was a pleasure to be a guest on your show as well. And I wondered if we could start off by talking about what is it that causes freelancers and consultants to make life far more difficult for themselves than it needs to be? Because clearly you've learned things the hard way for yourself running an agency, and you've figured out how to do it. So what is it that causes freelancers and consultants to make life difficult?
Yeah, so honestly, and this is speaking from very personal experience, it comes down to mindset, which I know you're big on, David. So in my case, I definitely made my life much more difficult than it had to be for years and years. And that's because I had the wrong idea in my mind about a few different things. One, I had the wrong idea about what it meant to have a successful business. I viewed a successful business as a business that had an office, that had employees, maybe one day more managers, more locations. And you know, you think of Fortune 500s, and that's what you think of as a successful business, rather than thinking about what kind of lifestyle do I want to achieve. What kind of profit do I need to achieve that lifestyle? And what do I want my day-to-day life to be? So, you know, I was trying to be Donald Trump instead of figuring out what Matt Englert needed. And I think that is an issue with a lot of us. Another thing is that a lot of us that get into freelancing, we just get into this cycle where we start feeling like we have to charge some market rate for our services that's basically based off what everyone else is charging. But problem is, pretty much everyone else is making the same mistake, which is they're going for whatever clients are readily available versus trying to actually sit down and figure out where you can deliver the most value to someone's business. So if you go around town and talk to a local mom and pop shop and say you want to build a website for them, inevitably they're not going to be able to pay you a whole lot of money for that website because there's only so much they're going to get out of it. So then you very quickly get it into your head, well, okay, this is what websites must be worth, instead of thinking the other way around. Who can I build a website for that's going to get tremendous value from their business? And that's all mindset. Once you kind of change that mindset, which took me years to learn, then the problem becomes much simpler.
Yeah, those are two huge mindset issues. The first one, I love the way you describe this, that we're trying to be like Donald Trump instead of Matt Englert. We all grow up being fed certain kinds of information and a certain message about what success should look like. And you're totally right that success is actually very individualized. There is not one blanket kind of success that works for everyone. So how do you, you know, when you're fed these images and you're fed a particular concept of what you should be like, how do you overcome that? Particularly when everybody else seems to be behaving like Donald Trump is where it's at.
And that is the money question, isn't it? So I think what has helped me the most is finding the people that are doing it a different way and learning from them. Because these are the kind of realizations that are very difficult to come up with on your own when literally everybody else is telling you something different, right? It's like how people start smoking in high school because everybody else is. Like, you know, you logically, you know that that's not the right thing to do, but peer pressure is a big thing because that's how we're built. So I think the key there is, you know, finding your own group of people that are trying to do things the way you're trying to do them and basically learning and building off each other rather than, you know, taking the popular media mindset. Like, for example, success means flying first class. Well, I flew first class a few weeks ago. And let me tell you, I would have rather not been flying at all because it was still a business trip. It was still work. And that first class seat doesn't mean nearly as much as just being able to hang out in the day and go skiing or something instead of traveling at all.
That's a great example. That's a great example. And you're right. Find your people. Find your people. I love that. Mm-hmm. So when you were in your business, how did you find your people?
So that took a while. And I mean, I think that kind of gets to another mistake that I made is I was very much the type of person early on that basically, I did a couple things wrong. I hung out with a lot of people that were building startups, and I was very immersed in the startup culture because I was living in Waterloo, Ontario, which is Canada's little version of Silicon Valley. So the mindset there, of course, was build a big business. And the other thing is I just kind of had my head in the sand. I didn't seek out the right people. I didn't seek out who my peers were. And that made everything so much more difficult for me. Whereas now, thanks to the internet, it's actually very easy to find these communities of people who are trying to do what you're trying to do, regardless of where you live. And now, in my case, I am now friends with tons of people that do the same thing that I do. And a lot of that just came from meeting people. I would strongly recommend, if at all possible, to go to conferences and events where your type of people hang out. And that seems like the most obvious advice, but it can be incredibly transformational. I didn't used to go to any events, any conferences or anything. This year I've gone to 4, and it's amazing kind of friendships and relationships that you form. And that's directly profitable because what you're doing is you're creating relationships that can lead to clients, but you're also creating relationships that can lead to transformational ideas, which is sometimes even more profitable.
Fascinating. Now let's turn to the second thing you mentioned, which is charging market rate for your services. What does that mean, charging market rate for your services? Is that a pricing issue? Is that a business model issue? Is it just how high you set your prices? Is it the way you price and your pricing model?
So the issue there is finding the people that you can deliver the most value to. And I speak to consultant after consultant after consultant, and I have emails in my inbox to prove this. And so many of them are concerned with how many dollars an hour should I be charging for my services? And I think that's completely the wrong question to ask because they're immediately turning themselves into commodities because they're basically saying, well, just like, you know, apples should cost $4 a pound, you know, web development services should cost $80 an hour or $150 an hour or $20 an hour or whatever. They're looking for some sort of magical number per hour. Whereas the real secret to getting the types of clients you want and earning the types of rates that all of us would like to earn is finding the clients that you can deliver tremendous amounts of value to and pricing off of that. So that completely transformed my business. I have helped other clients build six-figure and sometimes even seven-figure businesses based on my knowledge. And you can bet that they were happy to pay me far more than a mom-and-pop restaurant because I was able to deliver a lot more value to them. So if you can turn around and help someone increase their sales many times over, who cares if you charge $100 an hour or $300 an hour or $1,000 an hour? They're going to write the check because the return on investment is there.
Now, what do you do if a prospect comes to you and says, how much do you charge an hour?
Well, I get into my usual discussion. So I basically, I turn it around on them and I start talking about their business, what they're trying to achieve. And that becomes a whole conversation into their goals. And at some point, it's going to come back to rates. And I'm just going to say, well, this is what it looks like we can achieve for you. And this is what I'm thinking it'll cost. And if they push on the hour thing, then I simply point out that if we charge you hourly, it's actually not to your benefit, because then the interests are horribly misaligned. Because when we're not charging hourly, then what really matters is the results that we're getting for you. If we're charging hourly, then we have, you know, not that we would do this, but, you know, we're getting paid for the amount of time you can spend on the project versus the results we're going to generate for you. So our incentive is to spend lots of time on the project. And on your case, you have a lot of risk because you don't really know how long the project will take. And we just have this great misalignment. Whereas if you know you're paying X for Y, then we can just get on the same page and make sure we're delivering that result for you. But usually, if you've had a great conversation with someone about the kind of results you can actually help them achieve, at that point, they're going to forget about the hourly thing entirely.
That's great. So let's say you've now at least taken step one and kind of identified what success looks like for yourself, and you have figured out how to price things in a way that focuses on results and that really focuses on creating great value for your customers and clients. What's the next step to really create a successful, scalable business as someone who is selling expertise?
It depends what your end result is, first of all. Because we really have to think about that. For some people, that might mean make, you know, lots and lots and lots of money. Some people may choose to optimize for time instead. Like, for example, myself, I could work many more hours in the day and make much more money, but I already have all my needs covered. I've hit that six-figure profit mark. I don't necessarily want more engagements than what I need, because I enjoy my free time. I enjoy my hobbies. So you have to kind of consider that in the goal. If your goal is to simply build, get more and more clients and build this thing bigger and bigger, you're going to take a very different approach. In your case, what you might want to start doing is really systematizing the type of work that you do so that other people can start doing it for you, and ultimately you have a business built on processes. And once you have a business built on processes, you can scale. But the other way you can scale, and this is the way that doesn't require you to create this big machine, which again, there's nothing wrong with, it's just a matter of what you want. But the other way to scale is to simply go increasingly up market. So you can basically keep stepping up based on your past results. So once you can achieve a great result for a client, well, push yourself. Find the next client that you can deliver even greater value for and double your rates. And after you've done that and you've delivered successfully, double your rates again. There's no practical limit on how far this can go as long as the value is there. I've interviewed a guest on my show, Patrick McKenzie, and we had a great discussion about his consulting, and at one point he was billing out $30,000 a week. So at $30,000 a week, I mean, that's pretty good scale, even though it's all his work going into it.
Yeah, no, that is a great example of scaling without creating this big machine.
Mm-hmm.
So Matt, you've been able to create a business where you've managed to move from Waterloo to where you are now, which is?
Yeah, Calgary, Alberta, or just outside of it, actually.
Right, so you've gotten out of that the Canadian Silicon Valley, and you've moved to another place. Did you move to Calgary as a lifestyle choice?
Yeah, there are a few factors, but a big part of it was there are mountains out here. And originally, we wanted to move directly to Canmore, Alberta, which is a mountain town, but my wife wants to go to vet school, and that's not going to be really possible if she has to commute for an hour each way in snowy mountain roads to get there. But that's kind of, that gets us an hour away from the mountains so we can visit them regularly. And I think our long-term thing is still going to be to move to some like small mountain town. Like I love Waterloo, but I'm totally not that person. I mean, now most of the time I have like a week worth of beard growing, and I'm in my wood shop every day, and it's just very different from, you know, trying to pretend I'm some big businessman.
Sounds good. So how do you think business is different today? And you've alluded to some of it earlier. How do you think business is different today than it might have been a decade or two ago?
In general?
Yeah.
Yeah, so a very big change has been technology, actually. So when I had an office, there were actually some very practical reasons for getting an office. And a lot of that came down to collaboration and sharing work. Because at that point, we didn't have Dropbox. We had VPN, which was a way of accessing your local network from anywhere in the world. But if anyone's ever used VPN technology, it's pretty terrible and pretty complicated and pretty unreliable.
I can attest to that fact.
Exactly. So at that point, it made a lot of sense to put a bunch of people in the room because that was the most practical way to share files and to collaborate. But now we have Dropbox. Now we have all of these project management systems like Jira and Basecamp and communication systems like Skype and Slack, and everything is now in the cloud. So more and more, our personal computers are these dumb terminals, which is not a new concept, but it's something that's finally kind of come of age where I can really sit down at any computer, including borrowing like a friend's laptop, and I have access to all of my data anywhere. And that's completely changed how we work because now it's much more practical to work anywhere in the world. Like I can call you when I was in Croatia 2 years ago, I spent a month just living there for the fun of it and rock climbing every day. I could call any of my clients and take their calls and they would have no idea that I was halfway across the world. My phone number would still show up as a 519 number, just like theirs. And most of them were never told and never needed to know that I was actually in a completely different continent.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, totally. And I'm so grateful for it. Like, I think we're living in a very special time.
So that being said, on the flip side, what kinds of challenges does this environment pose for us as business owners?
I think we have to think a little harder about our businesses because it used to be possible to really worry about business on a very local level. If you were the big agency in town, then you were the big agency in town and that was your market. And if anybody else wanted to get into it, then they would have to open an office and hire employees and go through the same obstacles as you did. And your local reputation was all that you needed. Whereas now, of course, we have this global environment. So the businesses that naively attempt to run themselves the way that they ran themselves a decade ago are, of course, now facing competition from all over the world. But on the flip side of that, of course, is because we have this global access, we can find our exact target clients anywhere in the world. So for the business that's willing to change, you can narrow yourself down a lot more and easily target and reach the exact type of customer that you want to reach.
What's an example of the kind of customer that we wouldn't have been able to reach maybe a decade ago, but technology has allowed us to be able to interact with and sell to that customer now?
Sure. So there's lots of examples. One is simply targeting a market that you're not part of. So for example, if you want to target company, all the startups in Silicon Valley, you can do that now from anywhere in the world. You don't have to physically live there, which is huge. You could target, say, Fortune 500s. Before, if you wanted to do that, very, very difficult. You could solve that issue with plane rides, but you know, if you don't want to be traveling all your life, then that's a problem. And there's also just these weird niches that you maybe couldn't reach before because they're too scattered. I'm having trouble thinking of a great example, but online business owners, for example, they are by nature scattered everywhere around the world. So there isn't one central location full of them, and now you can reach out to all of them.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. What kinds of roadblocks do you see people repeatedly making?
What do you mean?
In business today, you know, we have opportunity now because of globalization. And we are able, particularly if you are in the information business or professional services, there are lots of ways that you can do business with almost anyone anywhere in the world. But I'm wondering what kinds of new roadblocks have come up as a result, besides competition.
Right. So I think a roadblock or a mistake that people make is they try to position themselves the same way they would in a local market. So the classic mistake is calling yourself a web development company and trying to attract clients globally. That's way too generic, because there are millions of other web development companies out there. So if you try to position yourself that way, you're just lost in the sea. Whereas now, if you want to compete in this global marketplace, you have no choice. You have to niche down, and you have to be that the perfect choice for a much smaller segment of your market. So for example, my friend Kai Davis, he used to be an SEO consultant. And of course, SEO consultants are a dime a dozen, they're everywhere. So he repositioned himself as an outreach consultant, which there are very few of, and he kind of invented that term. And that kind of changed the type of service that he was providing and dramatically narrowed down his target market to people who specifically want help getting on podcasts, getting on other blogs and things like that. And that dramatically changed his business.
Yeah, that's a great example. That's a great example. Matt, who have been some of the people who have influenced you in your own development and in your own career?
Sure. So probably my biggest influencer has been Tim Ferriss, because the 4-hour work week over the course of several years, because apparently I'm not a quick learner, but it succeeded in completely reprogramming my brain. And that kind of goes back to what's your idea of success? Well, let me tell you, in high school, once I got the impression that I could actually start a business, because originally I was going to become a programmer for Microsoft and that was going to be my life, then I realized there's this thing called business. And I instantly latched onto that. But at first, that was a very mass media Donald Trump style mindset. So in my mind for years, I had this vision that one day I would own a Ferrari. I would own a house with its own racetrack on which I could race the Ferrari on. And to me, that was the vision of success. And that's not inherently wrong, but it's certainly not well-defined enough, because that's defining your life in terms of an asset that you own versus the type of lifestyle that you actually live. Whereas what 4-Hour Workweek did for me is it helped me go beyond the mindset of what kind of stuff do I want to own to how do I want my life to actually look like? How do I want my day-to-day to look like? What should my morning be like when I first get up? And I used to get up and the first thing I would do is I'd check email, I'd get super stressed out, I'd down a couple cups of coffee, and by 7 a.m. I was already a wreck. Whereas now, when I wake up, 99% of the time, I don't even check my email right away. There's no need, because I've changed my approach to business, and that has, you know, I completely owe that to Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Workweek.
It's amazing how a book can be so transformational.
Yeah, absolutely. There's many people that have influenced me, but by far that has been the biggest game changer for me.
Right. And on a more personal level, who do you know yourself who is currently doing remarkable work?
So one of the cool things about getting to go to conferences and getting out beyond your own little piece of the earth is you meet a ton of other people doing great work. Two people that stand in my mind are John Corcoran and Jeremy Weiss. And they recently hosted something called an Entrepreneur Mastermind in Austin. And I went to that, and it was 13 of us plus Jeremy and John, and they had some guests come for a couple of the nights. And it was just this 3-day session of just intently masterminding about each other's businesses and all helping each other. And that was simply transformational. So John and Jeremy are the ones that put that whole event together. And if you later read John's recap of the event, they went through a lot of hard times to make that event happen, but they believed in it and it did happen and it was truly amazing. And so they're both doing good work, and there are two people I would definitely be paying attention to.
Great. And now turning back to yourself, Matt, what are you working on now? What do we have to look forward to coming from you in the near future?
The biggest thing that's exciting me right now is freelance transformation. And so I have an email list there where I've been sharing a lot of what I've learned. And I also have a podcast there where I interview other successful freelancers and agency owners. And what I found over the course of this year is that podcast has become a course in freelancing in its own right. So my goal now in 2016 is to just take all that and just multiply it by 10. More content, more guests, eventually come out with a product in the first half of 2016. And it's all near and dear to my heart because I don't need to be running freelance transformation. I mean, right now, it's not even profitable. I spend a fair bit to keep it running, but it's great because I truly believe in it, because the whole point of it is to help other people get unstuck without having to spend, you know, let's say 5 years of her lives or 10 years of her lives really grinding away. Because when you're stuck in that, you know, your podcast is smashing a plateau. So if you're stuck in that plateau and you're stuck in there for an excessive amount of time, it can be extremely damaging. Because, I mean, one, there's the danger that you just give up when success could be around the corner if you just change a few things about your mindset. And two, I mean, it can take a very real toll on your health, which is exactly what happened to me, both mentally and physically. It's the only rational result when you work 80 hours a week for 5 years straight. So I really want to help other people get unstuck with that. And that makes it a super exciting project for me.
That's great. So we have more to look forward to. Matt, how can listeners learn more about you?
Sure. So the best place to go, I will put together a curated set of resources just for your listeners at freelancetransformation.com/plateau. So if you go there, you can get a curated set of articles and other resources that are particularly relevant to this interview. And that would be my first suggestion. If you're interested in checking out my agency, you can, of course, visit tiltedpixel.com. And if you want to catch me on Twitter, I'm simply Matt Inglot.
Sounds great. And thank you for putting together a specific set of curated resources just for this episode. That's really terrific.
My pleasure.
So, Matt, thanks so much for coming on Smashing the Plateau today. It's been great having you on, talking about how to overcome roadblocks, whether you're a freelancer or it really any other kind of business leader. We all hit these plateaus, and it's great to hear your perspective and your experiences smashing through them, and what you've been doing with your audience in freelance transformation. My guest today has been Matt Inglot, creator of freelancetransformation.com. Thank you again, Matt, for joining us.
It's been a huge pleasure, David. Thanks for having me on.